You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, as you always are, here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen. And we are talking about a fascinating subject today that I think a lot of you will really want to stick around to listen to or view, or however you're checking us out here on latalkradio.com. Thank you for joining me. We're live around the world, and we're helping everyone, hopefully. We do have difficult times going on right now. A lot of stuff unresolved in the world, in our own personal lives. So today we're going to help you out with my special guest. We're talking about coping with and overcoming many of life's obstacles, whether it's trying to deal with early trauma, family, relationship issues, children issues, early trauma that we really are yet to resolve and walk through, also addiction issues, losses, and more. And my special guest is sharing his many struggles and how he overcame all of these things. Well, of course, he continues to struggle, as we all do in our lives. And that's what the journey is all about, right? Lessons. What have we learned in our lives? So let's bring him on right now. John Beyer.
Hi, Dr. Michelle. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you so much for writing the book. It's terrific. The book, by the way, is called Live a Little Better, One Man's Journey of Survival, Sobriety, and Success. And I really enjoyed it and gave me hope. It was heartfelt. I went through a lot of your struggles with you. So it was beautifully written, but has a really nice ending. So no more spoiler alerts here. Before we get into your story, if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is just sort of give people a little bio on you. I mean, as I say to many of my guests, we could go on for half an hour about what you've done in your life, but we'll just give a quickie here. John Beyer, you're not only a wonderful author of the book Live a Little Better, but you're also the founder and president of Men on the Move. Huge, huge company. You created it way back when and built it yourself. You're the founder and president, and of course, it's a top moving and self-storage company on the East Coast. And alongside your professional success as a father of a child with special needs, you've been deeply committed to autism-related causes. And you're chairman of the Long Island chapter of Autism Speaks, the founding board member of Spectrum Designs Foundation, and more. And I think you'll find that John Beyer's story of resilience and transformation from childhood trauma to neglect to his struggles with addiction and recovery and success in his family and business, it's going to be fascinating. So without further ado, I would love to have you start sort of talking a little bit about what your goal was in writing this amazing book and kind of sharing a little bit of your journey in the beginning, especially okay. When you talk about growing up in a dysfunctional family.
So I have two children. I have a daughter named Lauren. She's 35 years old right now. And I have a son named Gregory, who's a couple of years younger. He's 33. Mm. And he has autism. And my daughter is the one who really pushed me into writing the book.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, she really did. She said, I was telling her about something else I had read and how it inspired me, and it was terrific. And she went, Dad, you have to, and she wouldn't leave me alone. If you know my daughter, she's very
Isn't
tough.
Isn't that great?
And she really pushed me to do it. And then I reached out to Glenn Plaskin, who's written many, many books,
right?
Well-known, very well-known people. And I wanted to do it right, and I think I think we did a good job with it. I do. My story is one of it's a rags to riches. It's a success story. It is it's a perseverance story. Mm-hmm. I did grow up in a terribly dysfunctional household. Both my parents were, bona fide alcoholics.
Yeah. Sure.
Violence, police.
Right.
Neglect, abuse, the whole bit. Child Protective Services, food stamps, eviction notices, U.S. Marshals putting furniture out on the lawn constantly, somehow you survive that growing up, except that you don't think it's going to happen to you. I thought I would become an alcoholic, and I picked up my first drink, and I just drank differently than everybody else, and I had the disease.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, through environmental exposure as well as the genetics, of course. And you have two sisters as well. You grew up, Sherry and Denise, right? And
yeah.
So they were subject to experiencing this trauma as well.
Sure. They're a little older than me, and they don't like to admit that because they think they look younger. But we get along great. We speak almost every day. And it's great. My sisters and I are terrific. Yeah. They were my saviors growing up. They were older. They saved me from a lot of the pain the traumatics that were going on, you know, in this crazy household. I got my first job by pushing the carts back into the corral at the shopping center.
You just decided to do that. And how old were you?
I was about 12 years old, 11, 12 years old. And they would give me a quarter. I would help them with their groceries, and they would give me a quarter. And it was very empowering. At the end of the day, the manager came out and handed me $2.
Right? I love it.
That started my relationship with money. I realized that
you could make
my
money.
Own living, even that, at that age.
Well, it broke my heart when I was reading, you said you were hungry. And you were hungry for money, but you were literally hungry.
I was hungry.
Right?
Yeah. You open the refrigerator and you're hoping there's a slice of old American cheese wrapped up in the paper and the plastic, you know. And most of the time it wasn't there. So you really, we literally didn't have anything to eat. I learned how to make my own money. But I too became an alcoholic. I got into very bad shape, and I cracked up cars. I hurt people. Was sued for inordinate amounts of money, even 45 years ago.
$2.9 million. Oh my god!
In 79, and so that's like $12 or $15 million today.
Right, and you're 18 or 19 or something.
Yeah. And I got away with murder on that one. Hurt some people.
You were drunk driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And physically, it was taking a toll on me. My sister took me to a doctor and said, and the doctor looked at my GI series, the x-rays of my stomach, and said, we were expecting somebody 80 years old.
Oh,
I was 21 at the time.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was physically doing quite a number on myself.
Right. And I understand during the 80s, too. I mean, you talked about in your book. I mean, the 80s were weird, huh? I'm way too young for that, but no, just kidding. There was a lot of clubbing going on. Cocaine became the thing, too, with alcohol, and they drove each other. That was a problem, too. I know you were really...
Cocaine enabled me to drink more.
Yeah, there you go.
It was my buddy. Yes.
Yeah, it sure did.
But, one day I looked outside the window. The sky was a medium blue. The clock said 6 a.m. The clock said 6 o'clock, and I did not know if it was a.m. or p.m.
Right. My goodness.
And can you imagine coming to and not knowing if it's morning or night?
No. I mean, were you scared or were you like just kind of in a daze because you didn't know?
I was still in a daze. Pins and needles coming at me. I thought it was beginning to maybe hallucinate a little bit.
Right.
And it turned out to be morning, and I wound up getting up that day, and I called my girlfriend, Amy.
Yay, Amy.
She's my wife today, 38 years.
Mazel tov.
And I said to her, I'm going to get help. And I went to my first AA meeting that night.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I went to my first AA meeting.
It was that. And how old were you?
I was in 19. That was March 31st, 1986.
Oh my god!
So I was 26 years old. But who's counting? I'm sober 39 and a half years.
Can you? Right. Can you tell us a little bit more about Amy? She. I love how You laced her comments in the book as well, and also how you guys connected in life so early.
Well, I met Amy on my 17th birthday on the steps of our high school, John Brown High School in Flushing, Queens, New York. And a year later, we were dating, and we went through some very rough patches because I was drinking like a fish, even at 17, 18 years old, and killing myself with alcohol. But I got sober. And, you know, that night, after my first meeting, she was cooking dinner.
Yeah.
And before the door closed behind me, I walked in and said to her, our whole lives are going to change. And then the door closed.
Yes.
And they really did. And I worked like a maniac. And next thing you know, we got engaged and we got married.
Yes.
Yeah. And we had these two beautiful children.
Mm.
Like you said, we have had our, you know, challenges with that too.
Sure, sure.
The most rewarding thing in life is watching an alcoholic get sober.
Yes.
Or helping another parent whose child was just recently diagnosed.
Yes.
And sharing your experience, your strength, and your hope with them
yes.
to make their life easier. Those are the most rewarding things in life that I've experienced.
Oh, bless your heart. Those are the goodies. I that's what I call them. Those are the important things in life that we realize. And I guess, unfortunately, we have to go through most of our own learning journeys to get that. Some of us never get that until people in our lives, you know, and we get tired of being in the hospital and or causing accidents and or, you know, our lives are falling apart. You're right. I mean, beautifully said. Do you mind what it was like talking about that, hitting rock bottom? And was that when you didn't know if it was 6 p.m. or 6 a.m., was that your aha moment? Or what were some of the other situations where you knew that you were just falling down the hill and not going to get up?
Well, you know, I don't recall whether or not I put this in the book. It's kind of personal. I share this at meetings. I'll share it here. This is a biggie.
Thank you.
It's a little gross. It's a little gross. But, I mean, I'm 26 years old. I was actually moving furniture for a living, mm-hmm. working with somebody else at the time. And I would get so drunk, so out of it.
Yeah.
I would sit on the edge of my bed thinking I was on the toilet bowl.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
That's pretty bad. At 26.
That's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad.
Sure
so
it is.
That happened a couple of times, and then coming to it at 6 and not knowing if it's a.m. or p.m. and the number of cars, I had this scar on my face.
Sure.
It was, you know, 40 stitches, 20 inside, 20 out, because it went right to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't break my jaw. I got a tough jaw, but I'm a bleeder, so I can't be a boxer.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, dear. So sorry. And then the people you kind of hit in that accident tried to sue you, as you mentioned, 2.9 million or something.
Yeah.
And that was the aha of waking up and saying, I've got to get it together. I can't do it. I am so proud of you for deciding the next day to go to an AA meeting. I mean, that's a strong person, because a lot of times we need people to really keep bugging us and nudging us, and mm-hmm. they see us. I'm sure Amy was there all the way for you, as she mm-hmm. still is. She is a therapist as well, right?
No, she's not. My daughter is a social worker, and my wife is the controller in our company. I call my wife my controller, with or without the P.
Right. That's the best.
Not fond of that, so I hope she doesn't hear it.
We're sorry, Amy. We apologize in advance. So, I'd love to talk about what you learned about going to the AA meetings. I mean, my gosh, you went almost 300 days straight, you said.
Yes, for the first several years, I made over 300 meetings a year.
Woo!
Yeah, I was going all the time. These people, you know, they had the number on this thing with the drinking.
Right.
They figured it out. And I came from such an alcoholic environment. I did not know that you didn't drink, that there was a subset of society of people who didn't drink. In my mind, everybody drank. I mean, my father got me a job tending
Sure.
bar in his bar. My mother got me a job tending bar in the bar she drank. And of course, they were divorced by then. You know, as the Billy Joel song
Yes.
says, you know, as a matter of course, they got a divorce, you know.
Right.
You know, my mother, she got sober in the last 3 years of her life, and she became this
Good.
very, very different person. And I was glad to experience that. Unfortunately, she did smoke a lot, and she got cancer and died along with,
Well,
you know, horrible death, cancer, which was really pretty rough. It was, you know, I felt sorry for myself. I was 24 at the time. It was pour
sure.
me, pour me, pour me a drink, you know,
Right,
yeah,
of
you know, to
course.
numb the feelings and escape and fill the void.
Sure.
You talk about people being undernurtured as a child.
Oh
Yes, I
my
could
goodness.
say that. Was I ever really abused? No. Neglected? Absolutely. Yeah, undernurtured, yes, absolutely. And with alcohol and any kind of drugs and even sex and gambling and, you know,
Sure.
all the other addictions, you know, that's, we try to fill those voids.
Yes, we
That's
do.
my thinking on the subject matter.
I
But I
agree.
never graduated from college. I don't have a degree in psychology. There's no DR with a period before my name.
Well, well, you are helping people. Your book is therapeutic to me, and I know many other people. And I think people will really learn from it. Live a Little Better, One Man's Journey of Survival, Sobriety, and Success. It's a terrific book. By the way, you can find it on Amazon, of course, and everywhere else. But what is the best way, people, while we're talking, don't go away, folks. This doesn't mean we're saying goodbye. What is the best way folks can find out more about you?
Sure, you can go on to, you know, I do music. I wanted to mention that. I write
Yes.
music and I sing and I produce. The best white site to go on to John Beyer, JohnBeyer, music, MUSIC, .com. And on there you can get the book, you can order the book, and you can listen to my music too. My mom used to
Yeah,
make me sing to
great.
Andy Williams and Frank Sinatra.
Right.
I got into the High School of Music and Art, and I sing, I produce, and I write. And my 4-year-old granddaughter knows the words to every one of my songs.
I love
She's
it.
only 4 years old, and
Aren't well, they're really smart. She's in theta brain, so she's really taking it all in right now.
yeah, that's right.
Beautiful.
I'll use an expression. I fell.
Right. I would too. I love it. I love it. I know. Well, anyway, so I wanted to go back to AA and thank you for sharing all that. And also about your mom. I mean, what I have found with many of the patients I work with who are what we say dual diagnosis, right? They have a substance abuse issue and it's a disease, absolutely. And also, depression or anxiety, they all go together. But you said lovely things about your mom as well. When she was sober, she was an amazing mom. And I
Was.
love, and I hear this from a lot of patients who I work with. It's like, when my dad or my mom, when they're sober, they're really cool.
You know, my parents were very different alcoholics. My father was an everyday drinker, and he, you know, bottle of whatever, scotch mostly
Sure.
a day for sure. He really didn't drink it that
Right.
much. And he was never really drunk, smashed, falling
Right.
down. You know, a couple
Right.
times I saw him like waver a little bit when he walked, but never really. My mom, on the other hand, would get so smashed she would fall down all the time, and then
Yes.
sometimes she would stay dry for weeks on
Right.
end when she was trying. And
Sure.
she was always trying to hold her jobs, and she had two very prominent jobs for a long time where they
Yeah.
enabled her, actually.
Right.
She worked with Diane von Furstenberg, the designer, for a long time. She was her
Yes, that's
assistant.
right. I remember.
And Diane would send her to rehabs
Lovely.
and wait for her 30 days and wait for her to come back, because when she was good, she was good,
Yes.
you know, and wanted to come. And then she worked for the president of the Philip Morris Corporation at one
Oh
time.
my
And you
goodness.
have to be on your t you have to be on the ball,
Yeah, you do.
but eventually the
Oh.
alcoholism wins, and
Yes.
you can keep those,
And
you
your
know.
organs lose,
Yes, exactly.
you talk about some of the helpful slogans in AA, but one of them you said is your favorite. It's give it away to keep it. Why was that your favorite?
Yes. Well, because you do. I mean, the most reward. Well, that's why my daughter urged me to write the book, I think, because you do have to give it away to keep it. I've been giving it away, and in it almost inadvertently, I mean, you're helping people when you do that, and that's right. The beauty of AA and any 12-step program.
Yes,
it benefits you to give it away. So exactly. On one hand, it feels or looks altruistic, but on the other hand, it really isn't.
No, it's really true.
Yeah, it's a little tricky there, you know. Yes. But that is the truth, and that's why they call it a fellowship. The first word of the first step is we.
Right.
We admitted, you know, you're not alone.
Right.
We're together. And there's a kinship. You know?
Yes, exactly. We are not alone. Exactly. I love that.
Years ago, I started a father's support group for young fathers whose children were just diagnosed with autism. Because I knew how difficult it was for me. And my son was already diagnosed about 5 years by then. Oh. And I had the benefits of knowing my experience from the program.
Yes.
So I took those tools and I brought it to that group, which went on for quite a while. It's not there anymore, but that was a very rewarding thing that we did.
Yes.
I called the book Live a Little Better because I grew up in this Lefrak City in Queens, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Remarkable complex.
Yes.
It's really something else. And it still has a sense of community. I am still friends with those people.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I live there between the ages of 8 and 15. Mm-hmm. And there's a dozen of us that are still very close.
Terrific. That's terrific.
Last week, 8 of us went to dinner.
Oh, isn't that special?
In the old neighborhood, too.
Yes. Yes, I've been there.
And I called it Live a Little Better because there was a billboard on the Long Island Expressway that said Lefrak City, Live a Little Better.
Mm.
And it was there for decades and decades. Uh-huh. And my daughter rolled down the window when she was in college. She was in the back seat. I'm driving. And she rolls down the window. She was taking a photography class. And she took a picture of the billboard because she knew that's where I had grown up.
Right.
And she gave me this great photograph, and it was very touching to me.
Yes.
2 weeks later, they took the billboard down.
Wow.
After being there for decades.
Oh, my goodness. Right.
And that's why I decided to call it Live a Little Better, because that's always stuck in the back of my brain a little bit.
Right. Well, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. When we see, you know, all the time messages from wherever, it sort of sinks into our subconscious. And wow, it applied beautifully to your book.
So my daughter's inspired me to do a lot of things. And she and her husband were getting married. I had been taking some piano lessons only to learn that I'll never be a really good piano player.
Right.
And but I wrote a song and I wound up recording that song.
Lovely.
A week before her wedding.
Oh, perfect.
And that's what played while she and I danced to the father-daughter song. And she had never heard that. And we have a musical connection. And the song starts to play. And she said, I never heard this. But she goes, oh, my God, that's you.
I love it. Isn't that cool? I love it.
Yeah.
That's great. And you were singing early on. I mean, you always had a nice voice. And, of course, you have writing skills as well. So.
I love to sing.
That's wonderful.
There's a song about addiction that I released called Powerless. The first step of any 12-step program is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol or fill-in-the-blank, marijuana, sex, food, gambling, and that our lives have become unmanageable. That's the first step of the 12 steps.
Yes.
A lot of people can identify with that. I'm sure your listeners, your viewers can really identify with that. Somebody knows, somebody has some kind of an addict in their family. Somebody has an alcoholic in their family.
Oh, yes.
Almost everybody has an alcoholic in their family.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize, I'm just going to have a couple of beers after work to relax. Right?
It doesn't work that way.
It's the language. It's I'm gonna have a little wine to help me relax at night or sleep or whatever. and then it, you know,
yeah,
it's a lot more than that. But so on the steps in AA, which ones were the most difficult for you to overcome that you can recall? Sorry to just lay these on you.
No. Well, the fifth step of AA is kind of when you sit down and you have a, like almost a confessional with your sponsor, and you tell them all the dirty deeds and the dirty tasks, and you admit to another human being.
Yes.
You know, what you've done.
Yeah.
That's not an easy one. Not at all. And I was not drinking. I was in the program going to my 300 plus meetings in the first year, and I had a sponsor, but I had really not started working the steps. And I celebrated my first year, which I call the best night of my life. I'll go back to that in a minute.
Cool.
I told my sponsor the next day that if I don't do the fifth step with you soon, I'm going to drink again.
Oof.
I wound up doing it a few weeks later. And you tell them all this dark, dirty stuff. And he looks at you and he goes, yeah, that's why they call it. There's a name for that.
Exactly.
Then in my book, Live a Little Better, there's a few things that my wife, who I met when I'm 17, said to me, I didn't know that. And I kind of enjoyed that.
That's right. It's like, well, I didn't want to worry you or share. These are dirty deeds. And I also appreciate your transparency.
Yeah.
You just tell it like it is.
And yeah.
I think that's what's going to help a lot of people. And besides that, telling your story and how you overcame it, what advice would you give to folks struggling with alcoholism or other diseases of addiction to just sort of help them ease into getting help?
Yeah. Well, you're not alone. You're not alone.
Yeah.
And you're going to think, most of us think, that however your disease is manifesting itself, let's speak to alcoholism for a minute. It's not the drinking, it's the feelings and underneath it.
Yes.
And you're not alone in how you feel and what you've done, whatever you've done. There's a name for it.
Sure.
There's a name for it because it's been done before.
Yeah.
Relax. And just walk in, cross that threshold and say to somebody, I need help.
Yes.
There's nothing. It's the best thing in the world.
Yes.
Best thing in the world. Well, the best thing in the world is to give somebody the help and watch them turn their lives around.
Yes.
You know, on my first anniversary, I always say it's the best night of my life. Not even when my kids were born, not when I got married, certainly not when I got married.
Right.
No.
You're no, so funny.
I love my wife.
I know. But how dare you say that?
I always say the best night of my life because that night I felt, I stayed sober a year. I felt worthy enough to do and be and have anything in life that I wanted.
Yes.
And it's been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey. I've had some real health problems in the last several years.
Oh, bless your heart. You overcame. Do you mind sharing? I mean,
oh, sure. I overcame. You know, I had colon cancer that was fine after the surgery. And about 4.5 years later, it escaped into my liver. And three and a half years ago, I had 2/3 of my liver removed.
Right.
I was intubated. Okay. I was on a ventilator.
Oh my goodness.
I was dying. Mm. I'll tell a story. I'm at Sloan Kettering in the ICU.
Uh-huh.
I was intubated. I was just coming to.
Right.
And it was the month of my AA anniversary. It was in March.
Right.
And the secretary of the group, somebody named Mindy, sends me my coin in the mail. My wife brings it, my sobriety coin, which I carry with me all the time.
Sure.
It's quite a story. My wife brings the coin and the card to the hospital.
Aww.
And I open up the card. I was just barely able to sit and open up the card. And I open up the card and I take out the coin, right? And I look at it and I have tubes all over me. And you know, I put the card and the coin on the tray. And an hour later, a nurse comes in and attending to the tubes and looks down at the card. and says, "You have 36 years?" At the time, I had 36 years. I said, "Yeah, why?" He goes, "I have 7 years."
Wow.
And he had a whisper because he didn't want anybody.
Right, right, right.
Place of, you know, he was being anonymous. I was being anonymous. And he starts telling me, this is funny. He starts telling me all this stuff.
Oh, no.
It's heavy duty stuff, like fifth step material, confession stuff. And I'm listening to it.
Right.
And I said to him, I looked up at him and I said to him, "Are you telling me all this? Are you telling me all this because I'm not going to make it?"
That's right. Your story will not leave this room. Oh, my God.
He says, "No, because you are going to make it."
That's right. Well, it does give us something to think about in a way. You know,
but it was, I felt like it was all meant to be, that you mailed me the coin and he happened to see it.
Yes.
He was on that day, you know.
Yes, and you were his therapist recovering yourself.
There I am. I'm barely alive in these.
I love it.
But I love that moment. I'll never forget that.
That is a funny moment. Does that mean it? Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. That's really cool.
I can't believe I actually had a little sense of humor there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you did. And you do. And I like that. And there is lightheartedness, you know, in your book as well. So,
yeah. Yes.
So, folks, maybe who are dealing with issues might pick up or Google, get some information about the 12 steps or AA and the philosophies and other groups who help people along to, you know, overcome and or move on into their better lives, which, you know, is a good thing. What was it like for you after you, shortly after you became sober? What did you start to discover within your life that you were able to, oh my God, I didn't realize these things. What were those things?
Well, it was a lot of, it was so many different things. I remember the competitiveness. I mean, I was in my, you know, mid late 20s.
Sure.
And my friends were already buying co-ops and condos and I lived in a basement apartment. So I wanted to catch up.
Right. Sure.
So I worked like a maniac and, suffice to say, I've more than caught up. you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to do. And you know, when I was a kid, I used to have to take the leftover baseball cards when we used to flip them.
Oh, right.
Put them at the bottom of my sneakers because they had holes in them.
Oh.
And I never wanted to do that again.
No.
And
no.
I, you know, I have quite a sneaker collection today.
Yeah.
As a result, no.
But,
so, you know, that was one of the things I wanted to just catch up. And I just wanted to see what life was like. And everything became clear.
Yes.
You just wake up, you know?
Yes.
You know, at the beginning of every chapter, I start with the lyrics of a couple of lines from a song.
Yes, you do.
And the one that's where I'm getting sober, it's I use the Johnny Nash or the Johnny Nash song where it says, "I can see clearly now."
Yes.
You know, I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds.
Mm. You
know, that's, and that was very fitting for that.
That's right. It sure is. It is very fitting. And these are the things that you realize. And the journey you've had has been really not easy, but you are a strong soul and you've overcome it with the help of others. And of course, we are not alone philosophy. So you've really done amazingly well. Also, besides in your book, you describe, besides dealing with, of course, the dysfunctional early environment that you grew up in and overcoming that, taking on jobs as a little guy and learning the value of money and sort of saying, I'm going to do it myself, going through substance abuse issues. And, you know, of course, all the things that come with that. Being almost arrested, having to go to court, etc. And then, of course, then you became a man who started his own business from scratch, hard work, Men on the Move. Love that name. Very cool. and then, of course, marrying and meeting and having a wonderful family. The next obstacle you had to overcome, and I don't mean to use that word begrudgingly, but the next situation that you experienced was that you found that you had an autistic child. and you become very involved in helping that child and other families and learning all you can. Can you tell us a little bit about how that journey was?
Well, you know, a good friend of ours, Richie, said, my son was just around 2 years old, and he said, you know, Greg's not responding to his name like he used to. Yeah. And we started really paying attention, mm-hmm. and immediately we took him for hearing tests. Yeah. And I was praying that the hearing test,
yes,
have trouble hearing, because you can, right, deal with that to some extent. And it didn't mean that you were, you know, had problems inside your brain necessarily. And my wife didn't understand that at the time. And the hearing test came out okay. And then we wound up taking him weeks later to get him evaluated. And then, you know, it's a subjective diagnosis. It's by yes, a social worker or a clinical, sure, psychologist, usually. Sure. Autism is behavioral, is a checklist, and so on and so forth. And he's really a textbook example. Not very low functioning, but certainly not high functioning either. Today I'd say he's medium, but he's loving and caring. He's a beautiful kid. And my wife posts a picture of my son on there, and it gets the most, you know, on our face.
Absolutely.
Something like that, you know.
Absolutely.
It looks like his mother. it was hard. I mean, it's a blow to the gut. You know, you want to be able to talk to your son about girls and cars, college admissions, and
that
gets robbed from the parents' experience, and
sure it does.
And their world gets smaller. But you just try to make them as independent and as happy. That was our theory, to make both of our kids,
sure,
independent and as happy.
Right.
As happy and as independent, because I don't know which one's more important there.
So yeah, I'm not, right,
move them around.
Yeah. No.
You know, and so he's doing okay. He's okay today.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
You established some organizations and have contributed a great deal. Can you talk a little bit about those that are dedicated to helping people who have children with autism?
So I was once the chairman of the Long Island chapter for Autism Speaks. They've dissolved that arm of having chapters, mm-hmm, like,
right,
that.
Right.
We still do some things for the walk that occurs. We help them truck things out, because my moving company, we have trucks. So we store and move some things for them to benefit their walk. And they raise a lot of money every year.
Good.
For that. And then my son-in-law, Patrick, who's from Wales, he started an organization called Spectrum Designs.
Uh-huh. Right.
.org, with two women, Nicole Segru and Stella Spinakos. He runs it. He's the chairman of Spectrum Designs now. He's running the place. And he's amazing, actually. And they make T-shirts and hats. And here, for instance, they made this hat right here.
Aww.
And it says Spectrum Designs, and this says that this is this item was produced by a neurodiverse team at Spectrum Designs.
Oh, that's beautiful.
My son makes Men on the Moves hats and T-shirts and coffee mugs and sweatshirts and everything else.
That's amazing. How lovely.
It's a great thing.
Yes.
And they're doing extraordinarily well. They do work for Uber and Microsoft and Google and Northwell Health, a big hospital. They do a lot of good work. And they employ 40 people on the spectrum.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's terrific.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful. And
they were on Kelly Clarkson recently.
Oh, yes.
And they had a post that my son is on that went super viral. It has 30, 40 million views.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Colin Farrell is ordering from them as subsequently now. Teach, you know, and they're competitive. They make good products, you're helping people who could use a little help.
Oh my goodness, yes, a lot of help.
So I'm on the board of that organization.
Good. Oh, that's wonderful. How you and Amy have rallied to do that.
We have a major fundraiser at our house every year.
Oh.
150 people or so come, and,
goodness,
we're very grateful for them to come and do what they do.
Oh,
yeah,
that is lovely. So I know your book, Live a Little Better. It is a testament to second chances in life, and sort of I really applaud you for being able to get up every day after becoming sober. Get up every day. you got up that morning or evening when it was 6 p.m. or 6 a.m. to you, you didn't know in your mind, you went, okay, I'm done. Next day went to an AA meeting. Was it just who you are as a being in your soul, John, that propelled you to do this? Or what were some of the motivating factors that you can suggest to others to get up and move through their trauma and chaos and sobriety?
Well, you know, my parents, I've always, as troubled as they were very good, very bright people.
Yes.
My dad was a successful photographer at one time. He died dead broke in debt, in fact. In fact, he hurt me because his name was John Beyer also, and they attached his debt to my name.
Oh, dear.
Back then, when I was all screwed up and not knowing how to deal with it. And so I was fighting his bad debt for many, many years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and my mom didn't have any means either. And I wanted to be different than that. Sure. I wanted to, and like I said, after being sober a year, I knew that I could do and be and have anything I wanted. And it built upon that. You know, I was competitive. I think that comes from my sports buddies growing up in Left Rack. We were very competitive. We were always elbowing the other guy out, whether it was Wing Olivia or basketball or whatever it was. You know, we're still like banter about that stuff and say, no, I won that game. No, I won that game.
Very cool.
From 50 years ago, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, and I was just motivated. I knew maybe on some subconscious level that I could live a little better.
Yes.
And I the principles of the program, one day at a time, you do it incrementally.
Yes.
And ironically, when you teach a person with autism, maybe not so ironically, you teach a person with autism, you do what they call discrete trials.
Yes.
Break it down to small little increments.
Yes.
And yes. I've always said that, boy, it's really amazing what can be, you know, get done. My son wouldn't look you in the eye for anything. We'd have to hold an M&M over here to make eye contact. At you. And eventually we faded the M&M away and he would look at you in the eye.
Yes.
Incrementally, you know, he learned how to say basic things and sentences and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of hours, but things can get accomplished incrementally.
Yes, I think that's great.
And over time, you don't drink and you go to meetings and you get this wisdom and knowledge and you're surrounded by positive, mobile people who
have
some wisdom and a natural caring for you.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
No agenda.
Yes, no agenda. There's no agenda. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
It really is.
Nobody's preying on anybody.
Yeah.
It's really to help each other.
That's right. You all are together in this. You're all trying to hang in there and get through it. And I'll have your own stories. You know,
my song Powerless repeats the sentence. It takes strength to admit we are powerless.
Ooh, does it ever?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ever. Right. So. Yeah. And to go within and find that strength. And a lot of people, you know, say to me, oh, I don't want to do AA. It's so structured and it's religious. And I'm saying, no. It's there's no religion per se attached. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about a higher power.
I don't want to make any assumptions here, Dr. Michelle Cohen, but I'm assuming you're Jewish.
Yes. Grew up.
So, but I made my communion. I made my first confirmation. And as I share at meetings, I say, and religion, after puberty set in, and religion went out the window.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. That's really what happened in retrospect. Right. Then I dated, my only serious relationships of any level of seriousness was all 5-foot Jewish psychology majors.
Right.
So I really do have an MO.
There you go. No, exactly.
I married one of them.
Right. Yeah, that's right. A modus operandi. And not super religious, I would say more spiritual within myself. I'm very spiritual and Judeo-Christian, Kabbalistic, you name it, Buddhist, it's all in one. It's all voice of the culture, but it's all pretty much the same. And it's, you know, allowing a higher power, getting in touch with that to guide you.
So one of the steps in AA is came to believe in a power greater than ourselves.
That's right.
Very general. as we understood him. And that's the only underlying words in the 12 steps, as we understood him.
Right.
So there are no rules as to what you want to call your higher power or your God.
Right. And him or her or whatever, however. The book was written a long time ago, so there's no, you know, there's no sexism here. There's no plan.
No. But, and I found that very appealing. When I saw that, that was very important to me. Yes. I married a Jewish girl, and that was important to me.
Uh-huh, you know, absolutely.
It wasn't going to be very Catholic or there were no, I don't like rules. Still don't like rules.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you. You know, we have to find our own inner truth and what vibes with us and brings us joy. And I think the most important, you know, tried as it may be, is self-love and bringing empathy and love to others. That's what it's all about. That's our human experience. Boom. That's it. But we have to go through a lot of strife and trials and tribulations to get to the other side.
Yeah. In today's world where you have very outspoken, you know, I don't want to call them leaders, but people, the high profile people who say that empathy is weakness.
Oh boy.
I want to scream.
I know.
You know, like I said, you know, it takes strength to admit you're powerless. Empathy is not a weakness. It's a strength.
It sure is.
The human condition.
That's right. Beautifully said. Please, if you just tuned in, folks, check out John Beyer's book, Live a Little Better, One Man's Journey of Survival, Sobriety, and Success. It's about that time we're going to have to default to the news. thank you so much for being here on the couch with me, John. It's a pleasure.
And I appreciate
you and all that you share and how you help others.
You too can live a little better, one day at a time.
That's right. That you got it. All right. Blessings to you and your family. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. And as I always say, take care of yourselves. Yeah, first, then you'll be great for others. See you next week.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.